Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Chapter 12, Dhruva Maharaj goes back to Godhead. Text number 16. Atma, Stri, Apacha, Suvida, Balam, Ridakosham, Antapuram, Parivihara Bhava, Bhuva, Cha, Ramya, Hu, Jaladi, Mekalam, Akalaya, Kala, Upasrishtam, Iti, Saha, Payayo, Vishalam. So do you know your Brahmasamhita Haigriva? It's the same meter. Atma Srapacha Surido Balam Ridha Kosham.
Atma Srapacha Surido Balam Ridha Kosham.
Anta Puram Parivihara Bhuvascha Ramya.
Anta Puram Parivihara Bhuvascha Ramya.
Bhumandalam Jaladi Mekhalam Akalaya.
Bhumandalam Jaladi Mekhalam Akalaya.
Kalo Parishishtam Iti Sapayayo Vishalam.
Kalo Parishishtam Iti Sapayayo Vishalam.
Atmasya Pacha Surido Balam Ridha Kosham.
Atmasya
Anta Puram Pari Vihara Bhuvascha Ramya.
Anta Puram Pari Vihara Bhuvascha Ramya.
Bhumandalam Jaladi Mekhalam Akalaya.
Bhumandalam Jaladi Mekhalam Akalaya.
Kalo Pasrishtam Iti Sapayayo Vishalam.
Kalo Pasrishtam Iti
Atma Sri Pacha Surido Balam Ridha Kosham.
Atma Sri Pacha Surido Balam Ridha Kosham.
Anta Puram Parivihara Bhuvascha Ramya.
Anta Puram Parivihara Bhuvascha Ramya.
Bhumandalam Jaladhi Mekhalam Akalaya.
Bhumandalam Jaladhi
Kalo Pashishtam Iti Sapayayo Vishalam.
Kalo Pashishtam Iti Sapayayo Vishalam.
Atma. Body.
Stri.
Wives. Apacha.
Children.
Suvida.
Friends.
Balam.
Influence.
Army.
Ridakosham,
rich treasury.
Antapuram,
female residential quarters.
Parivihara
Bhuva,
pleasure grounds.
Cha,
and
Ramya,
beautiful.
Bhumandalam,
the complete earth.
Jaladi,
by oceans.
Mekalam,
bound.
Akalaya,
considering.
Kala,
by time.
Upishustam,
created.
Iti,
thus.
Saha,
he.
Payayo,
went.
Vishalam, to Bhadrakashram. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Thus, Dhruva Maharaj, at the end, left his kingdom, which extended all over the earth and was bounded by the great oceans. He considered his body, his wives, his children, his friends, his army, his rich treasury, his comfortable palaces, and his many enjoyable pleasure grounds to be creations of the illusory energy. Thus, in due course of time, he retired to the forest in the Himalayas known as Bhadrakashram. Translation responsibly. Thus, Dhruva Maharaj, at the end, left his kingdom, which extended all over the earth, and was bounded by the great oceans. He considered his body, his wives, his children, his friends, his army, his rich treasury, his very comfortable palaces, and his many enjoyable pleasure grounds to be creations of the illusory energy. Thus, in due course of time, he retired to the forest in the Himalayas known as Bhadrakashram. Purport. In the beginning of his life, when he went to the forest in search of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Dhruva Maharaj realized that all bodily conceptions of pleasure are products of the illusory energy. In the very beginning, of course, he was after the kingdom of his father, and in order to get it, he went to search for the Supreme Lord. But he later realized that everything is the creation of the illusory energy. From the acts of Srila Dhruva Maharaj, we can understand that somehow or other, if one becomes Krishna conscious, it does not matter what his motivation is in the beginning, he will eventually realize the real truth by the grace of the Lord. In the beginning, Dhruva Maharaj was interested in the kingdom of his father, but later he became a great devotee, Mahabhagavat, and had no interest in material enjoyment. The perfection of life can be achieved only by devotees. Even if one completes only a minute percentage of devotional service and then falls down from his immature position, he is better than a person who fully engages in the fruitive activities of this material world. Omagyantimirandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshun militam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha shri chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam dadati sva padantikam vandeham shri guru shri guru shri ta padakamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha shri Rupam Sagutatam Sahagna Vaganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Purichana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagna Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Cha Hey Krishna Kuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagapate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tamta Kamchana Gorangi Radhe Gandhavane Shri Vrishavanu Sute Devi Pranamani Hari Priye Panchakalpa Dhruvyascha Kripa Sindhu Pyevacha Patitanam Pavnevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Namo Vishvadaya Krishna Prasadam Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Nitya Namane. Namaste Saraswati Deva Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Pastitari Shatane. So the verse again. Atma Sripacha Suridho Balamrita Koksham Antapuram Parivihara Bhuvashtaramya Bhumandalam Jaladi Mekalam Agkalaya Kalo Pashishtam Itisa Prayayo Vishalam. Thus Dhruva Maharaj at the end left his kingdom, which extended all over the earth and was bounded by the great oceans. He considered his body, his wives, his children, his friends, his army, his rich treasury, his very comfortable palaces, and his many enjoyable pleasure grounds to be creations of the illusory energy. Thus, in due course of time, he retired to the forest in the Himalayas known as Bhadrak Ashram. So, interesting verse today. We've heard how Kuvera's discussion or talks with Dhruva Maharaj, and we saw that he was giving, you know, same instructions that we hear, because he's a servant of Krishna. The demigods are servants of Krishna, and they repeat the same. The transcendental knowledge is always the same, and it's just, you know, different personalities act as instruments for that supreme knowledge coming from Krishna. And in different pastimes, different situations, the same transcendental knowledge is being imparted by these personalities. And Kuvera was describing that all bodily conceptions are illusory. So this is you know, we need to keep hearing the same things. Srimad Bhagavatam is always telling us that, you know, we're not the body and Krishna is God, we are not God. We cannot pretend to be the enjoyers, though, you know, that's what we're trying to do, pretending to be enjoyers and controllers in our own small sphere of influence. You know, people might hear that, oh, you know, we're trying to imitate God. If you say to someone that actually believes in God, and say, hey, no, how is that possible? I'm not the creator of the world, and I'm not, you know, I didn't manifest the oceans and everything. How can you say that I'm trying to be God? But in their own small way, the God means controller and enjoyer. So in their just miniature little life, everyone's trying to control the material elements and enjoy it. To enjoy it, first you need to control it. So we have, you know, even every living entity in any species, they have their families, and they want to, you know, control their people around them, and bosses at work, and no one's satisfied in this endeavor. Everyone's very frustrated because it's not possible. It's, as the example is of like a fish out of the water. So it'll never be happy out of the water. So it's just not its it's not its constitutional position. So the fish belongs in the water. So to be actually satisfied, we have to, we're finding out where we actually belong. And, you know, when people don't have a sense of belonging, even just materially, you know, nowadays our society, there's no community. So we're very fortunate here that even just materially we have a community of devotees, and especially a community of devotees. So we have that just friendship and association. But even materially, people don't even have that nowadays in the cities. It's very impersonal. Everyone's separated, and just working for big companies, you know. So people try to, and the work culture is so pervasive nowadays that people try to make that community in their workplaces. So that and workplaces, if they've got a lot of money to spend on consultants and everything, they try to figure out how they can create work environments that their employees will just love to be there and sacrifice everything for their making money for the company and try to have, like, I don't know, team building exercises in the company. you know, catch up after work for work parties and try to make it all like a community. But it's not satisfying. People are still just, you know, they're still just slaving away every day. So it's interesting how, you know, how ingrained we have to work, like we have to do something, but people forget what are actually they working for. People are so caught up in the, you know, the advertising machine that is just, you have to have so many things, like these subscription TV and so much. You have to watch all these videos on your phone, you need to pay for so much data. And you need, but people forget that what their basic necessities are is good food. You know, if we have some nice healthy prasadam, and then it's very, very satisfying. You don't need much more. But then, you know, people spend so much money just going out to restaurants and you know, there's so much variety of illusion out there. But like my doctor was telling me, you know, this is one reason why people get very sick, because they're eating out all the time. And what is the consciousness of the people that are cooking? And not only that, but the quality of the food itself, like, you know, it might be a very expensive restaurant, but they know how to cut corners. They're trying to make a profit as well. They're not going to use the highest quality of everything. And you know, modern society is very expert at now at just providing the basic, the minimum, just because it's all about profit. So at the expense of profit, the quality just gets compromised. So when you're having, you know, like on the supermarket shelves, everything's processed. Like there was this one gym, and they, you know, they actually had some idea about health, and they were recommending, if you go to the supermarket, we recommend that you just focus on the outer areas of the supermarket, where the fresh stuff is, fresh vegetables or, you know, grains, bread and stuff like that. But don't avoid the interior, the aisles and everything, because that's just got all the garbage in it. It's the stuff that's been on the shelf for how many, who knows how many months. And sorry, just went off on a tangent there. But so this Isha-Upanishad is describing Prabhupada describes in Isha-Upanishad the four defects of the conditioned soul, and one of them being that we're in illusion, that this is, you know, and this is the reason he gives these four defects of the conditioned soul is because this is why we cannot accept knowledge from just anyone. You can't just accept knowledge from someone who's defective in their consciousness. therefore, that discussion in Ishapanishad is explaining the necessity of accepting knowledge, Vedic knowledge, Shabda Brahman, which is flawless. So persons who claim to have knowledge, spiritual knowledge, we can generally point out that they're defective in these four ways. So the one of them being that we're subject to illusion, and the example Prabhupada gives is that we accept our body as the self. And just like Prabhupada gives the example of animals, that they'll never conceive of, they'll never even absolutely never cross their mind to think that I'm not the body. Never. The dogs and the cats and the birds, they have a body, they're a spirit soul inside the body, but they're fully absorbed in the body and thinking that they are the body. And similarly, human beings nowadays are that is why Prabhupada said that people are like animals nowadays, because they're just fully absorbed in the body, doing everything for the body, working for the body. So that's illusion. And here Dhrupa Maharaj was saying he considered, first of all, his body, and so many things he considered to be products of the illusory energy. So the illusory energy manifests in so many varieties. And so it was interesting. This is like a very, you know, deep realization to see that everything around us we're situated in illusory energy, and it's not reality. It's a temporary manifestation. So I was talking to one devotee recently, and they actually had a very similar realization that, you know, they were describing, yeah, I know we're all just parts and parcel of Radha Pallava, and everything else, like my family and job and this and that, it's all just illusion. And I was surprised. I was like, wow, this is a very very great realization. But at the same time, it can seem shocking if you start telling people that, oh, your family's illusion, and, you know, but because having this conclusion that everything's illusion, doesn't lead to neglect. Devotees shouldn't, think that because it's all illusion, then I don't have any, you know, I don't have any responsibility toward these things, family, etc. So I think it was previous few verses that it's describing how Dhruva Maharaj, and in one of the purports, that Dhruva Maharaj, he did everything perfectly. He did his duties as a king very, very perfectly. And even Prabhupada's example is of, in this connection, is of someone who is having a extramarital affair and they don't want their partner to find out. So they do everything very, very extra perfectly so that their partner won't suspect. And similarly, the devotee, they have a relationship with Krishna. That's their secret, relationship that they don't, you know, they keep concealed. And, you know, they don't kind of just, you know, become like a madman and just always screaming about Krishna and yelling out and in ecstasy of love of Krishna. But as we see in Prabhupada's example, they keep their spiritual joy internal. And they do all their worldly activities very perfectly. And everyone will see, oh, they're doing everything so nicely, like Prabhupada was managing, he was showing us how to do these things perfectly. Because if we don't do our responsibilities very nicely, then we'll be, you know, guilty of neglect, and people, it's not the example that we want to give to people, that of being neglectful of our responsibilities. But internally, then the devotee knows that, you know, Krishna is everything for them. And of course, we're trying to get to that stage. So, Prabhupada's describing in this purport how, you know, this description, this realization of Dhruva Maharaj is sort of at the later period of his life, or after he'd seen Krishna, after he'd seen Vishnu. So Prabhupada is describing in the very beginning, when he was just a small boy, then he wanted something, and he was after the kingdom of his father. And so in order to get it, he went to search for the Supreme Lord. So, but then later he became a Mahabhagava, a great devotee. So this is instructive for us, which is Prabhupada say that the significant sentence. So from the acts of Srila Dhruva Maharaj, we can understand that somehow or other, if one becomes Krishna conscious, it does not matter what his motivation is in the beginning, he will eventually realize the real truth by the grace of the Lord. So the example of devotees and people in general, we like to follow the example of people. We may not understand philosophical concepts very easily. You know, they can be maybe very in-depth and, you know, subtle things to understand about philosophy. But if we see someone's example, if they're manifesting that particular spiritual knowledge in their behaviour, then we can readily understand that and follow it. So therefore, Prabhupada saying from the acts of Srila Dhruva Maharaj, we can understand. And it does not matter what his motivation is in the beginning. So Kanishta Adhikari, this means that a materialistic devotee means we want something from our devotional service. Somehow or other we come into devotional service, we meet devotees. So this is described in chapter 7 of Bhagavad Gita, to the four kinds of people who surrender to Krishna and four kinds who don't. So the four kinds that surrender to Krishna, the person who is in distress. So these are four categories of Kanishta Adhikari, or neophyte devotee, materialistic devotee. They have some material desire. So the example of the devotee who's in distress is Gajendra from Canto 8. He's being attacked by a crocodile, quite distressful. And then the example of the devotee who's desiring wealth is here, Dhruva Maharaj. And the example of devotees who are inquisitive, that is the sages of Naini Sharanya, making inquiries to Shaunika, headed by Shaunika Rishi. And then the example of the devotees who are searching after the absolute truth, that is the four Kumaras. So it might be surprising that these devotees are examples of Kanishta Adhikaris, materialistic devotees, even the four Kumaras. So therefore we understand that to identify ourselves or recognize ourselves as neophyte devotees, Kanishta Adhikaris, it's not a bad thing. It's not an offense. It's not like a sometimes when we're starting, you know, we join and we kind of like, we want to be free of this kind of tag of being a neophyte devotee. We're like, oh, please just let me stay in devotional service a few more years so I won't be a neophyte anymore. A neophyte doesn't mean, you know, years of practice or age. It doesn't mean that because if someone's a child devotee, doesn't mean they're a neophyte just because they're young. Prahlad Maharaj is a Mahabhagava, 5-year-old boy. It doesn't mean just because we're our age or our how many years we've been practicing or our ashram or anything. But it's about our level of consciousness, our state of consciousness and maturity of consciousness. And so it's fine to recognize that, yeah, I'm doing devotional service and I want Krishna, but it's true that my consciousness is materialistic. I want things from my performance of devotional service. We might want, you know, we want material security and comfort. Sometimes we want profit, adoration, distinction. But Prabhupada says it does not matter. It does not matter what our motivation is. Because we see from the example of Dhruva Maharaj that he really wanted this big kingdom, the whole universe. But the way he practiced devotional service, he was so determined. And that's the example that we take. That he got the instructions to chant the mantra from Narada Muni, his spiritual master. And he did this with such great determination and performed severe austerity in the execution of that instructions. So, and then, because of that sincerity in executing the orders of his guru, then he pleased Krishna. Because we please Krishna by pleasing our spiritual authorities and by following their instructions. And so Dhruva Maharaj pleased Krishna, and the effect is that he's purified. Krishna purifies us from within the heart. So, this is a special kindness, the unique kindness of Krishna that is not available by worshipping any other demigods. They don't love us so much that they will purify our heart, or even then. They're not even capable of that, actually. Because Krishna is situated in everyone's heart. And it's not, you know, we don't have an elephant in our heart. Like Ganesh is not in our heart. So this is a special kindness of Krishna. That he can, even though we have material desires, he can simultaneously fulfill those desires, but in such a way that we won't want them anymore. Just like Dhruva Maharaj considered, you know, he wanted a great kingdom greater than his grandfather, and he got it. But then, you know, well, even before he got it, he just by seeing Krishna, by having experience of Krishna, then he realized that, you know, this is just insignificant, this desire of mine, this material desire. It's like broken pieces of glass. And I thought it was like, you know, diamonds. So Krishna allows us to see that the things that we were desiring are really just insignificant. And if we get experience, so therefore we need to be engaged in activities that are going to give us a higher taste. You know, just by associating with devotees, we can have a higher taste. when we're associating with devotees who are so pure in their consciousness and exemplary in their behavior and activities, then it's really, you know, can be very inspiring and uplifting. And, you know, that's some kind of higher taste to associate with devotees like that. Or having a higher taste from seeing the deities and worshipping the deities, decorating the deities and chanting the holy names, especially on Sankirtan. Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, they're very kind, very merciful. They're very pleased when we do that, when we give the holy names to others. So there's definitely a very great higher taste that's available on Sankirtan. And also in studying Srimad Bhagavatam, we can get a higher taste this way. So, therefore, when we have these higher tastes of higher experiences, then the other material desires which we have gradually subside. And we should remember that it's a gradual process as well. Although Dhruva Maharaj did it in 6 months, that he was, you know, Tivrena Bhakti, so focused, so determined, that we may not be so as determined, and so it's going to take longer for us. So we should remember that it's a gradual purification. The demigods don't, as Prabhupada explains, it's a business deal. Like you want something from Krishna, the demigods, and they give it to you, and that's the end. Bus. There's no purification of heart. You still have material desires. Even you might want, you might have more. Your material desires might increase because you get that thing from the demigods, and you think, "Wow, that was good. I want more." And I'll keep worshipping. So they don't give the purification. Of course, that process of demigod worship is also prescribed in the Vedas. Because they're representatives of the Supreme Lord, and so it's just much, much longer, and eventually they do, you know, they start seeing that that's the gradual process. They start seeing that, oh, I'm not the body, and, you know, because in the Vedas describe, oh, you can go to the heavenly planets, so. How do I go to the heavenly planets in this body? No, it's the soul that transmigrates, and there's a very, over many, many lifetimes, a gradual development of consciousness in demigod worshippers. But it is prescribed in the Vedas, and it's better than the atheistic society that we have, where people just think that out of their own greatness, they're rich. You know, they out of their own efforts and greatness, that they can make something of themselves in the world. But they don't. No one thinks that. You know, everyone's so puffed up that no one considers like approaching a new, you know, demigod or Supreme Lord for help and praying for assistance. People just people are taught from a young age that you can make something of yourself if you try hard, and which is, you know, completely false. We understand, because destiny, people can't change their destiny. No matter how much they try, they can desire in this life to, you know, be something and materially, and if they don't have the karma for it in this life, then they can. If they're desiring hard enough, they can get it in the next life. But, you know, they can create some new destiny, but not for this life. This life is already set. So we're seeing the opulence of renunciation of Dhruva Maharaj, that he just left everything and went to Bhadrakashram, the forest in the Himalayas, to completely absorb himself in Krishna consciousness. So this is the system of Varnashram Dharma is leading to, you know, gradual development of Krishna consciousness, a social system, a very nice social system to help everyone to make progress in Krishna consciousness. So the stage of Vanaprastha, once the family duties are all completed, then devotees have more time to devote to Krishna consciousness, and it's recommended they do austerities to kind of counteract whatever attachments they might have developed in Grihastha Ashram. So I'll leave it there. See if anyone has any comments or questions. Yes, Philip.
So, you mentioned before in Prabhupada's purport that Prabhupada was saying that it doesn't matter which motivation we have when we start our devotional service.
Mm.
But then at the same time, the nectar of devotion says that actually advancement of devotional service depends on the attitude of the performer. So it appears contradictory.
Yeah, no, it's not contradictory. The attitude. Dhruva Maharaj had material desires, but his attitude was to because he was instructed by his guru, so his attitude was to fully accept those instructions of his guru and execute those instructions with full determination. So his motivation was still in the beginning was still materialistic, but his attitude was definitely to be fully absorbed in the process that's going to purify us of those material motivations. Yeah. So that's what we learned from Dhruva Maharaj, how to have that correct attitude. And any other comments or questions?
Yeah.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
I'm wondering if there is or there are souls that never dropped out of spiritual world and always stay there, or they all have experience of coming to different planes.
No, there are. Yeah, that's what Prabhupada describes as the nitya siddhas. They never fall down. And the nitya bhadas, eternally conditioned.
And what's the reason we fall out? Our punishment or our own will?
Yeah, I mean, Prabhupada, the phrase that he used most commonly is somehow or other. So he's not so specific about it. And somehow or other, like, we're here now, we have to figure out how to get back. And you know, he also said, like, Krishna knows what happened somehow. The root cause is envy, envying Krishna. That just a fleeting, you know, thought or desire to be like Krishna, to have, and is enough to put us in material consciousness and acquire a false ego and so on. But it's just like a flash of lightning, that description is there. Our time spent in the material world, many, many lifetimes of Brahma, it's just like a flash of lightning in the comparison to eternal time. Yeah. Any other questions or comments? Jai Srila Prabhupada. Granthaya Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Jai.